Religion and morality. This thing will click. Oh, you're supposed to put these things together before they work, you know? Short circuit between the headsets. Religion and morality. Many people equate being moral with being religious. Or being moral with being a Christian. But morality alone does not constitute the religion of Jesus Christ. We found in the household of Cornelius, here's a man who feared God. Here's a man who prayed often. Here's a man who gave alms to the people. But he had to have Simon Peter come to him and give him words whereby he might be saved. Furthermore, some think that if a thing is moral, it is necessarily something which may be incorporated into the worship or work of the church. Some folks don't seem to understand why Christians do not practice certain things in the religious context the way the rest of the world does. They will look at a particular practice and, not finding anything wrong with it morally, say, well, why don't you use this, or why don't you do that? And that's, to them, valid argumentation. But the reason is simple. The reason is that some things may be morally right, but religiously wrong. In fact, this is a very simple Bible principle, if we just stop and look at the scriptures a little bit. Nadab and Abihu, of course, are the first things that come to mind here. Leviticus chapter 10, the first two verses, we read about Nadab and Abihu were sons of Aaron. They took a censer, that was what they burned incense upon. They put fire in it, they put incense on it, and offered it to the Lord. But the text says they offered profane fire before the Lord, which he had not commanded them. So fire went out from the Lord and devoured them, and they died before the Lord. Well, there's nothing immoral about kindling a fire. I'm sure most of us at one time or another have kindled a fire. Keep warm. Nothing immoral about that, is it? And quite frankly, there was nothing immoral about burning incense. Nothing immoral about it. What was the problem? The problem is God told them where the fire was to come from that was to be used in offering this incense. They were told in Leviticus 16:12, which is only one of many other places, then he shall take a censer full of burning coals of fire from the altar before the Lord, with his hands full of sweet incense beaten fine, and bring it inside the veil. This was the instruction as to where the fire was to come from. Unfortunately, Nadab and Abihu substituted fire from another source. And God showed his displeasure, did he not? Things morally right, but religiously wrong. Now, another example of this is Moses and the rock. Moses and the rock. In Numbers 20, verses 1 through 13, read it with the children of Israel out into the wilderness of Zin. They, of course, had no water. They started complaining about the water. They gathered together against Moses and Aaron, and they contended with Moses. If only we had died when our brethren died before the Lord. Why have you brought us up? Complain, 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 which is typical of Israel. But in verse 7, in this context, the Lord said to Moses, take the rod, you and your brother Aaron gather the congregation together, speak to the rock before their eyes, and it will yield its water. Thus you shall bring water for them out of the rock, and give drink to the congregation and their animals. So Moses took the rod from before the Lord, as he commanded him. Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock. And Moses said to them, "Hear now, you rebels, must we bring water for you out of this rock?" Then Moses lifted his hand and struck the rock twice with his rod, and water came out abundantly, and the congregation and their animals drank. Well, what's the problem here? Well, the Lord spake to Moses, and he said, Moses and Aaron, and said, "Because you did not believe in me to hallow me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them." Oh, now just a minute here now. Is there anything immoral about striking a rock? No, I mean, nothing immoral about striking a rock. But what's the problem here? Fact is, by the way, in Exodus 17, in verse 6, God told Moses to take his rod, to speak to the rock before their eyes, and it will yield its water. And that's what God expected. He expected him to do exactly that. But in Exodus 17, 6, he told him to strike the rock. You see? Well, just a minute now. Here he said, speak to it. Here he said, strike it. So there was nothing wrong in striking a rock. What was the problem? Well, the problem was, and God said it in plain terms, didn't he? You did not hallow me before the people. What did Moses do? He said, "Shall we?" Uh-oh, we are doing this now. God said, "Speak to it." Moses said, "Shall we?" Uh-oh, this we business and hitting the rock, that shifts the emphasis off of God and puts it back on Moses and Aaron, doesn't it? So, something. And I'm sorry, I forgot to flick back over here to verse 8 of Numbers, which we've been talking about. Something morally right, but religiously wrong. Simple as that. One of the most outstanding examples of this, and one that really illustrates what we're talking about, is David the king and the new ox cart. David and the new ox cart. You notice David in 2 Samuel 6, beginning with verse 1, gathered all the choice men of Israel, 30,000, and David rose and went with all the people who were with him from Baal Judah to bring up from there the ark of God, whose name is called by the name the Lord of hosts, who dwells between the cherubim. So they set the ark of God on a new cart and brought it out of the house of Abinadab, which was on the hill. And Uzzah and Ahio, the sons of Abinadab, drove the new cart. And they brought it out of the house of Abinadab, which was on the hill, accompanying the ark of God. And Ahio went before the ark. Then David and all the house of Israel played music before the Lord on all kinds of instruments and so forth. And when they came to Nacon's threshing floor, Uzzah put out his hand to the ark of God and took hold of it, for the oxen stumbled. The anger of the Lord was aroused against Uzzah, and God struck him there for his error, and he died there by the ark of God. What was the problem here? What was the problem? Well, there was nothing immoral about a new ox cart. I mean, after all, you know, David didn't send some old dirty ox cart up there to get it. He had one made for it. It was clean. But of course, David, when this happened, he was afraid. And he said, "How can the ark of the Lord come to me?" And consequently, he would not move the ark of the Lord with him to the city of David. and remained there for 3 months. Now, what was the problem here? The problem is that David did not do it the way God said to do it. It wasn't because the ox cart itself was immoral. It's because God gave him instructions, or gave Israel instructions, on how the ark and the instruments of the tabernacle were to be moved from place to place. And there was not an ox cart in there. Didn't have anything to do with ox carts. We're told here in Numbers chapter 7, and down at verse 3, they brought their offering before the Lord, 6 covered carts and 12 oxen, a cart for every 2 of the leaders, and for each one an ox, and they presented them before the tabernacle. And the Lord spoke to Moses, accept these from them, that they may be used in doing the work of the tabernacle of meeting. And you shall give them to the Levites, to every man according to his service. So Moses took the carts and the oxen and gave them to the Levites. 2 carts and 4 oxen he gave to the sons of Gershom, and according to their service, and so on and so forth. Oh, just a minute now. Aren't these supposed to be used to move the Ark of the Covenant? Well, no, they're not, actually. According to Deuteronomy 10 and verse 8, that's not what they were intended for. Now, notice, ox carts were not only morally right, but they could be religiously right when they were used appropriately, couldn't they? But now, here's the Ark of the Covenant, Deuteronomy 10 verse 8. At that time, the Lord separated the tribe of Levi to bear the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, to stand before the Lord, to minister to him, and to bless his name to this day. In 1 Chronicles chapter 15 and verse 2, David realized what he had done. And he said, no one may carry the ark of God but the Levites. For the Lord has chosen them to carry the ark of God and to minister to him forever. He suddenly realized that's the way it's supposed to be done. What was the situation? David did something morally all right, but religiously wrong. He violated what God had commanded, didn't he? And God, of course, showed his disapproval. Now, let's get down to some simple things. Hamburgers and Cokes are morally right, but religiously wrong. Now, not everybody might agree with me on this, but there's nothing immoral about an occasional juicy hamburger and a great big old Coke. In my case, it would be a diet, but nonetheless, nothing immoral about it. In fact, there's nothing immoral about eating meat, period, according to what Paul wrote in Romans 14. Nothing immoral about it whatsoever. And there's nothing unlawful about drinking soda pop of any kind. In 1 Corinthians 6, beginning verse 12, in fact, Paul said, all things are lawful for me, but all things are not helpful. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. Food is for the stomach, and the stomach for food. But God will destroy both it and them. That's the lesson right there. It's not a matter of what you eat. No big deal. But what do we mean? It's more religiously wrong and morally right. What are we talking about? Now, we're talking about the Lord's Supper. That's what we're talking about. In 1 Corinthians 11, we talked about this morning in the course of our lesson. Paul reiterated the things the Lord had delivered to him concerning the Lord's Supper. And we understand that what the Lord used to institute the supper was made up of unleavened bread, which had been prepared for the Passover, and the fruit of the vine, which had been provided for the Passover. That's what he used. And consequently, whenever we learn that, we learn the significance of these things, we understand that it would be religiously wrong to use hamburgers and Cokes on the Lord's table. And someone says, well, why? There's a simple answer to that. Nothing else was authorized by God. That's why. You can't put anything in the place of it, and you can't add anything to it, because this is what God has authorized. The unleavened bread and the fruit of the vine. Christmas. Morally right, religiously wrong. There is nothing immoral about a day, any day, on which we have a big meal with friends and family, and if we choose to exchange gifts with one another. The fact is, we read in Luke chapter 5 and verse 29 about Levi, who gave a great feast in his house, and a great number of tax collectors and others came in and sat down with him. And in Acts 20 and verse 35, we find the inspired writer saying, I've shown you in every way by laboring like this that you must support the weak and remember the words of the Lord. It is more blessed to give than to receive. So, having folks over to eat and exchanging gifts or giving and receiving, there's nothing immoral about that. Nothing immoral. And, frankly, it is not immoral to study about the birth of Jesus Christ either. There's nothing immoral about that. Why, it's in our Bible. And you know, we don't overlook that part of the Bible because of what the world does to it. There's nothing immoral about studying about the birth of Jesus Christ. But, you know, the problem here is that the only day to which the Lord has attached a religious significance is the first day of the week. That's the only one. That's the only one. And it isn't just the first day of the week once a year. It's the first day of the week every week. And on that day, we honor our Lord, whether it be to talk about his birth, his death, his resurrection, what he has planned for us in eternity, whatever it might be. It's his day. That's his day. It is religiously wrong to set aside a day, whatever that day is, and make it a religious obligation attached to myths, i.e. December 25th. That's religiously wrong. And that's why the world is doing something that is morally permissible, but religiously wrong. That's where the problem comes in, whenever it becomes a religious observance and a religious obligation in many cases. Why is this so? God did not authorize it. It's as simple as that. That's the reason. We talked a little bit this morning about instrumental music in worship. Instrumental music is morally right, but religiously, you know, there's nothing wrong, nothing immoral, I should say, about playing a mechanical instrument of music. Do it myself sometimes. I remember a fellow whose name was David, who was an accomplished musician and who played on his harp, according to 1 Samuel 16:23. Remember that? However, the Lord did not authorize their use of this in worship. As we noticed this morning, the New Testament church engaged in singing. And we already discussed Ephesians 5:19 this morning, so I'm going to go right to Colossians 3:16. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord. There's nothing in there about playing. The only thing in there is singing. In 1 Corinthians chapter 14 and verse 15, Paul said, what is the conclusion then? I will pray with the Spirit and I will pray with the understanding. I will sing with the Spirit and sing with the understanding. Singing is what we read about in the New Testament, not singing and playing. And of course, we talked a little bit about Hebrews this morning, but in Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 12, the inspired writer says, I will declare your name to my brethren in the midst of the assembly. I will sing praise to you. Remember the passage we looked at this morning said, the fruit of our lips is what we offer up. You remember that? So, what do we conclude? Well, it is religiously wrong to add instrumental music to the worship of God. Why? God did not authorize it. Just as simple as that. Just as simple as that. Christians eating together is morally right, but doing it as a function of the local church is religiously wrong. Now, we know there's nothing immoral about Christians eating together because we read about it right there in Acts 2 and verse 46. They broke their bread from house to house and ate their food with gladness and simplicity of heart. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. But the Lord did not authorize the elders of the local church to gather the saints together to eat a common meal as a religious exercise. The only meal they are authorized to call the saints together for is the Lord's Supper. That's what we talked about just a moment ago. Now, notice this. Paul said in this context, in verse 20, when you come together in one place, it is not to eat the Lord's Supper. Oh, just a minute. They thought they were. They thought they were. Well, what happened? In eating, each one takes his own supper. Uh-oh. We went from the Lord's Supper to something different here. We went to their own supper, not the Lord's Supper. One is hungry, another is drunk. What, do you not have houses to eat and drink in? Or do you despise the church of God and shame those who have nothing? What? Do you despise the church of God? Why? Because you're using the body of Christ, the church, as an occasion to have a social meal together. And that's not what the church was intended for. That's not the work of the church. Paul said, what shall I say to you? Shall I praise you in this? I do not praise you. Period. Now looking on down at verse 34. Same context. If anyone is hungry, let him eat at home, lest you come together for judgment. The rest I will set in order when I come. What does that tell us? If we do our eating to satisfy our hunger by coming together as the church, that is function of the local body, we are doing it unto judgment, or literally condemnation. Simple as that. That's what it says. Likewise, the church is authorized to provide food for those of the faith who are hungry and in need. I mean, we find the situation over there in Acts 2 and verse 44. The church had just begun. The people were far away from home, planning to go home immediately after Pentecost. But now, they who believed were all together and had all things common. What does that mean? Well, people who owned property sold it. And they laid it, according to verse 35 of chapter 4, at the apostles' feet. And it was distributed as each one had need. The saints were taken care of in the local church. It wasn't the church meeting to have a social meal, but the church was doing benevolence to those who needed it. And we see that example many times, by the way, in the scriptures, both within the local congregation and congregations elsewhere that had needs in the time of famine and so forth. What do we conclude? It is religiously wrong for the church to organize and promote the eating of common or social meals. Why? God has not authorized it. Simple as that. Youth. parties and dominoes and golf. And I could list a bunch of other things, but I don't want to take up all my chart. Are morally right, but religiously wrong. You know, there's nothing immoral about wholesome recreation, is there? Nothing immoral about it. The fact is, in Mark 6 and verse 31, Jesus said to his disciples, "Come aside by yourselves to a deserted place and rest for a while." In other words, there's times when you need to take a little time and get a little rest, recuperate a little bit. Now, what about such activities? Well, these activities are within the realm or function of the home. Parents are responsible for bringing up their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And this is part of their responsibility. The church has not been charged with the entertainment of the youth. I think enough time has gone by that many congregations that thought they could keep their young people by entertaining them have learned that that didn't work. Because that's all they came for, was the entertainment. They weren't grounded in the truth. And eventually many of them just fell away, natural attrition. But we have to understand that the church does not have the authority to provide for the entertainment of the youth. That's not what the church is for. The church does have the authority to teach young people or anyone the gospel of Jesus Christ. Paul said to Timothy in 1 Timothy 3 and verse 15 that the church is the house of God, the pillar and ground of the truth. The church's responsibility is to propagate the truth, not to entertain the troops. Simple as that. Religiously wrong for the church to organize and promote recreation for the members, not just the youth, but the members in general. Why? God did not authorize it. Just as simple as that. What we need to learn about this is there is a biblical principle distinguishing between things that are moral and things that are religious. And Christians need to be careful to observe the difference. The world around us doesn't get it. And so we must be careful to observe the difference. Through the prophet Ezekiel, in Ezekiel 22:26, God said of Israel, "Her priests have violated my law and profaned my holy things. They have not distinguished between the holy and unholy, nor have they made known the difference between the unclean and the clean. And they have hidden their eyes from my Sabbath so that I am profaned among them." I want you to think about what he just said right there. What was the problem? No distinction between the holy and the common, as the new RCA American Standard Version renders it. No distinction between the holy and the common. Notice they use the word common here in place of unholy. The reason why I point that out is because in that context, it doesn't mean something that's just like totally ungodly. It just means something that's common. Now, in the case of hamburgers and soda, those things would be common things. As opposed to unleavened bread and fruit of the vine, which are what? Holy things. That's right. Holy things. Now, what was their problem over here? The people hadn't been taught. The priests weren't making the differentiation. And so people didn't know the difference between them. Now, what's happening today? Well, today, churches in general now have so blurred the distinction between the holy and the common or the unholy, that people don't know that there's actually any difference. Now, I'm going to call on my good brother, Tom Thornhill, for just a moment here, and remind you of his lesson about the community church movement and his example of one large community church that offered you any kind of worship you want. You could have contemporary worship, traditional worship, or you could go to the coffee shop and drink some kind of exotic drink and watch it on TV. Or you could go sit on the lounge and drink some iced tea and watch it on TV. What happened here? No distinction anymore between the holy and the common. And that is exactly what happened to the church of our Lord through the years. Exactly what happened. People lost sight of what was holy as opposed to what is common. Pretty soon, well, there's nothing wrong with that. Let's do that. Without any regard for whether it is acceptable to God or not, or whether it is simply something that's common. See? And away we go. One thing after another after another. I mean, it kind of, I have to tell you, if it wasn't so serious, so deadly serious, I would have to chuckle just a little bit at this. That there are brethren, especially in Texas, but not just in Texas, there are some elsewhere, who are staunchly opposed to recreational activities such as basketball and baseball and you know, golf and whatever else, you know, bowling, whatever else it is, it gets brought in under the auspices of the church. They're staunchly opposed to that. That is not the work of the church. But they have potlucks. They have potlucks. Well, that's different. Why? What's different about it? If I were to go to my Bible and try to find out what the difference is between the holy and the common, where would I find that? Well, the closest thing I come is 1 Corinthians 11, where Paul says, if you're hungry, go home. Like I said, if it wasn't so serious, it would almost be comical. But you see, that's the digression. And that's why I don't refer to these people necessarily as being just erring brethren. They are digressive brethren. Just plain and simple, they're digressive brethren who have moved away from the truth. And sorry to say, are getting further away from it every day. My prayer is that, and I have to tell you, me and a lot of other preachers have talked about this through the years, and I'm sure all of us have mentioned it sometime in our prayers, that the people in these congregations that have gone so far afield will suddenly wake up one morning and say, whoa, how did we get here? And then start searching for somebody who's following the book the way they know it should be followed. And it's happening. I feel very blessed to have lived long enough to see it begin to happen more and more in different places, where sincere brethren have been just led down the primrose path into digression and didn't realize what was happening to them. And then one day they woke up and said, hey, I don't want to be here. I don't belong here. And then start looking for people who are standing for the truth. But you know, it didn't happen overnight. It didn't happen overnight. It was subtle things. Subtle things. Just gradually moving away from the truth. Getting just a little bit farther and farther away from the truth. Until finally, they decided, well, you know what? There's nothing in the scripture that says thou shalt not do this or thou shalt not do that. And so guess what? we're going to do it. We're just going to do it. Because after all, it looks good to us. You know, that's like the fellow who I heard actually say one time. He says, you know what? He said, I like the organ and the piano. In fact, I like instruments all the way around. I enjoy a good orchestra. And since I like it and I'm made in God's image, that means God likes it. And so I think there's nothing wrong with it. We can do that. I hate to tell you something, but I like hamburgers and Coke. Does that mean God likes hamburgers and Coke? No, we know better than that. We know better than that. Has nothing to do with it, does it? It may be morally all right, but because God hasn't authorized it, it is religiously wrong. Just as simple as that. Religiously wrong. We need to be able to make this distinction between that which is holy and that which is common if we want to be pleasing to God. That's what it comes down to. If you want to be pleasing to God, you have to be able to make this distinction. And being able to follow this principle that we've been talking about in the lesson this afternoon is a step in the direction toward pure and undefiled religion. It is a step in the direction toward the worship of God in spirit and in truth. It is a step in the direction of being pleasing in the sight of God. And that's what we're all interested in. I leave the lesson with you for your consideration. Appreciate your careful attention again this afternoon. We want to extend heaven's invitation in case there might be one or more here who have not yet obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ. I want to give you an opportunity to give yourself an humble submission to His will, to be buried with your Lord in baptism upon the confession of your faith. And if you're a child of God who's sinned, we offer you another opportunity while we are assembled to ask for the prayers of your brethren as you confess your sin to God and ask for His forgiveness from a penitent heart. If you're responsible to the invitation, we offer you the opportunity to come while we stand and sing together.